This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's show is Why You Haven't Been Able to Get Fit and Lose Weight with world weightlifting champion Jerzy Gregorek. We see someone who's obese and tend to think, you know, if only they would just reduce their calories and exercise, they wouldn't be fat. Such simplistic concepts make getting fit and losing weight difficult and almost impossible for most of us. Jerzy's wife, Aniela, has won 5 world weightlifting championships and established 6 world records. Jerzy has won 5 world weightlifting championships and also has a world record. Their book is The Happy Body, The Simple Science of Nutrition, Exercise, and Relaxation. Now, we're not talking about bulky muscle bodybuilding weightlifting. We're talking about very fit, high-energy, agile weightlifters with quick movements. Aniela and Jerzy combine their own experience on optimal fitness with years of coaching athletes and non-athletes. The result is a remarkably sophisticated integration of practical exercises you can do at home. I know I've tried them myself, and I'm very impressed. Surprising nutrition principles, and an emphasis on relaxation, posture, flexibility, and quickness. Jerzy, welcome.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Most people think of marathon runners as really fit athletes, and you say, no, they're actually possibly defeating their own fitness.
Yes, I would like to explain why. Most of our clients that came to us in the last 20 years, they needed help, either help with taking off medications, stopping medications, or stopping pains, or be attractive, lose weight, or gain weight, or become stronger, happier, many desires that people have before they come to a trainer. When we tested their body fat, it just happened that almost everyone that we tested doesn't have enough muscle, so it's underweight inside the body, has too much fat but not enough muscle. So almost all of our clients, they had to gain muscle and lose fat. So what happens with the program that can be only created to help these people, it must be the program that is strength training program. It cannot be the program that is endurance program, because the endurance program will cause muscle loss. So it will create even worse body than before the person started. So a woman, let's say, who is 150 pounds and wants to lose 40 pounds and be 110 pounds, if she uses marathon running or if she uses treadmills or endurance type of running, she will lose more muscle than she has at that time. So she can lose 40 pounds, but when she arrives to be 110, she can be also at the same time obese. So it's not going to help her. She can be more unhealthy when she is 110 pounds than 150 pounds.
Now, this is counterintuitive because we look at marathon runners and they're skinny and they're usually energetic. You're saying that most of the weight they have is fat?
Yeah, well, not marathon runners. They are just skinny. They are all underweight. So we could say that a marathon runner is anorexic, but we don't say that because we think that they are athletes at the same time. But when you measure the body height and whatever the weight have they have and how much muscle they have, they are not really different, this 6-foot man, than a woman who is 5'2" and she is 80 pounds or 70 pounds. I have a lot of clients, men, come to learn the Happy Body, let's say about 140 pounds, but they are 6 foot. And they are underweight, about 30, 40 pounds of muscle. They are clear anorexic, but you wouldn't qualify them for that. You just don't look at them that way. So, also, you know, they know that there's something wrong with them, and they need help. So, usually they are weak, usually they are very tight, usually their posture breaks. So, in order to really help them, we have to rebuild them. They have to gain weight, they have to recover the posture, they have to gain flexibility, and gain this 20 or 30 pounds of muscle. So, when you think about marathon running is muscle loss, is speed loss, is strength loss, is flexibility loss, and when you think about aging, is exactly the same. Atrophy is exactly what the aging is, so muscle loss, because of the muscle loss, strength loss, then flexibility loss, because the muscle is hardening with age. So when you put this together, you can really clearly see that what you shouldn't do in life. And when you look at sprinters, we have the opposite. You have everything what the opposite of the aging is.
Before you go there, so with our marathon runner, they've re-sculpted their body to be very efficient at running marathons, but little else. You talked about in your book how their muscles actually shorten, and most of the rest of the muscles in the body atrophy, and their cardiovascular isn't all that strong.
They will definitely, all of them will be underweight. And then by doing that in life, they will be creating a worse body than actually better. Also, you know, the other factor is of wearing out of joints. And they're also doing that. We have a lot of data about marathon runners and replacement of knees and hips. We don't have this with sprinters.
Okay, so sprinters are your heroes.
Not heroes. It's just the people who happen to be sprinters, and it just happened that they do the thing that is good for them. So it's just coincidence to what we are attracted to. And, you know, what we do causes certain effects.
So why are sprinters one of the ideal type of athletes?
Why? Whatever they do, whatever happens because of this running, is what we really want if we want to have a long living and quality living. So why we sprint, we become stronger. If we become stronger, our immune system is better. If we are fast, that we are flexible. If we are flexible, then we have better posture. Also, when we do not run long, then we are not wearing out our joints. So everything what that sprint is serves us to have a really great and outstanding, the best body that we can have.
And one of the things that you emphasize that I don't see other fitness programs talking about is quickness, and that being quick has a lot of benefits.
The speed is very important because it's faster we are, the quicker our reflexes are. So, and the quicker nervous system is. So it's easier for us to save ourselves if we trip, if we do something that we could cause our falls. And we know that is the delay reflex is one of the causes that people fall and end up with broken hips or legs. And then that is also the cause when they cannot heal, and it can be the cause of death. So to prevent that you would need to do something what is a certain training, type of training that you wouldn't lose in life that speed, or you could even improve that speed and not lose it in life. But it depends on agility as well, you know. If you trip and you really want to save yourself, you have to have a great body. You have to be quick, you have to be strong, you have to be flexible, you have to be agile.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you also write that being quick increases your metabolism?
Yes, metabolism depends on two things. How much muscle you have and how efficient the muscle is. So, the size of the muscle and the efficiency of the muscle. So the more you have the muscle, the better body you will have, better metabolic rate, also immune system better. The more efficient that body is, also will create that higher metabolic rate. So let's say you have a body 150 pounds, and you can lift 100 pounds. But you can have also the body 150 pounds and lift 300 pounds. So the efficiency is definitely there, and efficiency, like any kind of a machine, if you want a machine or a faster car, then all parts of that car have to be better than the parts of the car that is twice as slow. So the parts of Ferrari or BMW have to be a lot of better than the parts of Toyota. So that's clear.
One of the things that you talk about in emphasizing quickness is that in 6 or 8 seconds, you use up all of your ATP, which is the initial source of energy that our bodies go for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you use energy for anything in life that you want, whatever you want to do, so the quickest energy source is adenosine triphosphate, and it's called ATP by coaches and medical doctors. So if that only lasts for about 6-7 seconds, then if you still keep running or doing whatever you do, sugar in the muscle has to go, or in liver and everywhere in the body system. Once the sugar is gone, then your protein becomes your source. Once the protein is gone, then, you know, the fat is the last to go. The fat is the sluggish energy field. It is good to use fat when you are very slow, so then actually the fat becomes, but when you want to be quick for too long, then the muscle becomes source. So now think about Olympic Stadium, and whoever you see on that Olympic Stadium will be running very fast, throwing things far, jumping high, and jumping far. And everything, whatever they will do there, will be below 10 seconds or very close to 10 seconds. Only runners on that Olympic stadium, on the track and field, all the track and field, only runners will run and do certain things that they are longer than 10 seconds.
Now, I'm a little confused about something. We use up the ATP, we use up the sugar that's in the bloodstream, and then you say we go to protein, which is...
Which is easier to burn. So, you know, let's say you keep running and running and running, and when you run for, let's say, 20 minutes, and you don't have any sugar in the body system, of course, you know, that's why those who run far, they drink all the time Gatorade, or they drink something and try to help themselves to prevent the muscle loss. So they have to have energy for running. So because they run as fast as they want, and fat is a very slow energy field, the muscle is the target. That's why they will also engage some fat, but also the muscle. So they will burn both of them, but you know, the muscle is the next one to go after the sugar.
So is when you say using protein, is that synonymous with using muscle?
Yes, the muscle is the faster energy to be used for whatever we do in life. So, you know, the fat is the very sluggish, and the most energy is actually in the fat. But the fat doesn't want to go easily. It's a very slow. So we cannot be quick and fast and lose the fat, because it has. If something is in the body that is actually faster, it will be used. If it's sugar, it's sugar. If it's ATP, it's ATP. If it's muscle, it's muscle.
So fat is like burning coal, then.
Yes, exactly. So you know, when we, let's say, sleep, then we use the fat the most, but we are the most relaxed. So we are not engaging in any action. So our nervous system is parasympathetic nervous system, it's not sympathetic nervous system. Whenever we are in the sympathetic nervous system, we are in action, then everything, whatever supplies energy, is used. So it's good when we, during the day after training, are in parasympathetic nervous system. So how to do it? In order to do that, you would need to be more in the relaxing stage during the day. That's why weightlifters in Poland, we call they shuffle, or athletes, you know, the power athletes, they shuffle through the day. They are very relaxed, they are easygoing, but they are not, they don't have any type A personality. They are completely relaxed. So you can compare this to tigers and lions and cheetahs. When you see them in action, they are very fast and aggressive. So, but when they are not, they are rolling on the ground and yawning and playing.
So how do we trick our bodies into skipping using protein or muscle and going right to the fat? I mean, part of what you do is have a little short rest after each burst of lifting dumbbells or whatever the exercise is.
What we do in Happy Body, we created, there is a certain breathing type, but there are two reasons for it. One is that we want to create that rest, but also we want to release stress from life. So it's a double reason. So how actually we do that? So in order to have interval training, we introduce the certain breathing in the Happy Body. And that certain breathing in the Happy Body is taken from Olympic weightlifting. And also tennis players do that, and, you know, other athletes do it, like golfers, and they don't even know that they are doing, but they are doing it. It's automatic, and it's the same in weightlifting. So how it does when it can, why it happens when it comes to Olympic weightlifting. A weightlifter, in order to lift the weight up to his chest, it's called clean. So he will go into the position and grab the bar and will inhale and flex his stomach to solidify the lower back, and will start dragging this bar up quickly and throw it up from the thighs and catch it on the shoulder. When he has it, then we will exhale there and inhale again to jerk that and to finish the jerk, to throw the bar above his head and catch it again, and then, you know, when the lift is done, drop it down and exhale. So he has his breaths in and out, and during this breaths in and out, he prepares his body. So in this the Happy Body, we included this way of lifting in order to create interval training in the Happy Body. So how we do in the Happy Body, for the posture, for standing posture, we lift our toes up in order to shift the body toward the back, toward the heels. When we do that, we help people to eliminate this posture breaking and looking, stooping forward, moving gravity forward toward the toes. So you can see people how they sometimes walk, and their back is arched, and the head is forward, and they are more walking on toes. So to eliminate that posture problem, we ask people to lift the toes up. Once they lift these toes up, their body is moving backward toward the heels. And that's what weightlifters actually do to help themselves to lift from the heels. So next thing, what we tell them to do is to flex certain muscles in order to stabilize, you know, middle of the body, stomach, the abdominals, and then gluteus. So glutes and stomachs are flexed, and I mean tight. And after that, the person inhales and lifts the weights, you know, lift the weights but holding the breath. Lift the weights above, let's say, the head, stretches, and then puts down, lowers down the dumbbells, and exhale. And while exhaling, he will release all the tension in the body system. What happens with when we do that way, that we have complete focus on every step when we actually exercise, that movement becomes mindful. Whatever we do only one thing at a time. Because of that, we have 100% focus, and we are mindful in what we do. And because of doing that, we forget, we also created this interval training between inhale and exhale, but at the same time, we forget about the world outside and forget about the overwhelming messages that we can have in our mind, and that creates this stress release factor that we slowly in this training, like we would meditate, forget about our problems for just at least this 30 minutes. And when the workout is finished, two things happen: that we are more enjoy what we did, everything is, we are more relaxed. We do not lose muscle when we do the training like that, but we gain. We improve our flexibility because all the movements are complete movements for the body system. And when we finish, we kind of forgot about these overwhelming messages. So we more like after meditation, after 20 or 30 minutes meditation, we feel good and we also pleasant for everyone around. And that's what people say, that after 20 or 30 minutes, that this effect is in them.
To put things in perspective, most fitness programs or most personal trainers don't pay much attention to posture and certainly don't pay much attention to being mindful and reducing stress. And just little touches you do, like curling the toes, is just ingenious for getting people to do better posture, which is so critical to long-term fitness.
Posture is very important because posture creates this healthy spine. And, you know, when you have the spine that is perfect, so on both sides of vertebrae, you have the same space. But when you compromise and you don't think about posture, when you start training people, let's say you have football players or basketball players, and then you will use Olympic weightlifting to train them, but they are not flexible, or you train them wrongly, you don't have right skills for it, then they will compromise. They will start using the, let's say, wrong muscles for the lift. They will start using back muscle instead of leg muscle. So if they do that, the back will start bending and they will start using more back, and the posture will start breaking and gravity will start shifting forward. When that happens, the back breaks a little bit forward, the whole thoracic area of the spine rolls. But that creates the gap between the vertebrae in the front of the body closer to each other. When that happens, there is a pressure in the body that develops there. That sets up inflammation, and that can be cause of arthritis or set up of the long-term problems in the body system. So what is the most important that trainers should think about? The most important is flexibility, because flexibility form is first. Once you have form, then you can train skills. When you have skills, you can train efficiency. So if you jump somewhere in between, you can really not actually help the athlete or the person, but you can even cause more problems.
So the exercises that you have people do, and I've tried them myself, normally don't like exercising, but these were pretty easy to do, and it's mostly dumbbells and takes about a half an hour a day. The goal of it is what you call happy body. Could you kind of define happy body for us?
The happy body is really youthful body. So we many years when we train people, we noticed that what people want, a lot of these things that people want, like the people want to be happier, more energy, no pains, no medications. They have a lot of desires and goals. But when we focus on making people stronger, making people more flexible, and making people set an ideal body weight, and relationship with the muscle and fat change, making them quicker. So we notice that all the things that they really wanted in life happened. They achieved what they wanted, and then because of this achievement, what they wanted, also they became more content, more happy, and in control. Then, you know, if they did it on their own, and, you know, achieve it in their own home, they also developed this sense of control, the feeling that you know that if something wrong you will do, you know exactly what to do to go back and correct yourself. And that is a very important effect of the happy body training, that people are not melodramatic, that they will be lost, did something wrong, but the happy body people know exactly how to come back to the program. So do it from this like an anchor, you know, like the happy body like ships on the ocean, but they have rudder and they have destination and they have an anchor. So fitness people today kind of like they are ships without this rudder and without the anchors. There is no craft, and the craft that is testable and measurable, it has to be there, and that's why we created the happy body for people, so they could have it, they could pursue it, they could measure themselves against, they could create their tested, that could create training system, and be constructive how they actually do it. So that's how actually athletes do. You know, the athletes pursue certain goals, they have crafts, and they have this anchor that in case something happens wrong, then they know how to correct and how to heal themselves and pursue what they pursue.
So I would summarize this as you've built your system on what works from years of experience with athletes and non-athletes. And while everybody gives lip service to holistic, this is the most holistic system that I've seen.
You know, we were in that place about 17 years ago when we watched our client. We were in LA, and at the time we coach people 7 days a week, and we noticed that certain things what people supposed to do, they don't do. So we try to understand the whole phenomenon, and after a while I just got it, and it's just like, you know, when you are obedient, you do everything what you ask to, but when you are responsible, you actually do when you are not watched at all. So when I thought about that, so I thought that in responsibility and independence is actually the way. And that's what happens to athletes. Athletes usually are given the certain program to do, and they go and they do. And they, like I had a program for 6 weeks, and coach wrote me the program, and then I did. And then, you know, after 6 weeks, he wrote me another one. So it's like he gave me these guidelines, but it was me who was doing every day what I was supposed to do. So at that time, 17 years ago, when I understood that, I removed all our clients from the gym, and we started educating people toward independence. We started guiding them and telling them that more important is to do by yourself than with the help. That actually when you get that body, whatever you want, that you full body by yourself and have this 100% credit, then it will be a lot of easier to maintain it, and you will just become that thing instead of be given that thing. So it was a very important moment in development of the happy body. From that moment on, we, of course, about 50 of our clients quit, and 50, you know, went with us. But from that moment, we noticed amazing changes in people. People were happier. People achieved what they wanted to achieve. They really became, and they knew that they, whatever they did it, they didn't because we helped them. We guided them, but it was the whole work was theirs. And that is how we do today, and with everything what we do, we don't take credit for people's changes. It's it's them who change themselves.
Well, you're the catalyst.
Exactly.
We're talking with Jerzy Gregorik. He and his wife, Angela Gregorik, are the authors of The Happy Body. And let me back up a little bit on your personal history. Around 1986, you were involved in the Solidarity movement in Poland?
I was 86 I arrived to United States. In 81, I was actually at the Fire Academy in Warsaw and studying for fire protection engineering. I was just finishing my master's, and you know, at that time, in 1981, there was this fight for any kind of force in the country. So the government tried to use firemen against demonstrations, solidarity demonstrations. And in order to do that, they had to change the policy of our academy. So they had to make us military school. So, but that, of course, came out. Solidarity people found out that they wanted to do it. And then I arranged this meeting of all students, with 400 students, and 400 students decided to have a strike. And then we were on strike, and the strike was 10 days. And professors in Warsaw and the government and negotiations during these 10 days. And after 10 days, the government decided, Jaruzelski at the time, decided to take us by force. And they landed helicopters on our academy and broke the gates and drove tanks inside and took us out. They ended that, but it was not so simple, because after that, they created a new school after the new name, and they asked all the students to sign certain allegiance to the school. So about 100 of us decided not to do that, and I was one of these 100. And we decided to pursue our careers in different universities. There was a lot of solidarity help at the time, and they tried to place us in different universities so we could continue different education. But we could never be firemen anymore. And, you know, many, they just laughed to be firemen. Dream, but it was more important was to, I guess, for us to have our soul and then actually have our be a fireman. So we decided to follow our call, and then after that, of course, Jaruzelski attacked Poland, the whole Solidarity. 1981 and December 13, they attack our school December 2nd, and December 13 they attack whole Solidarity, and Solidarity was in exile in a way and was locked, and that was it started this very dark time in Poland, and I was underground and a lot of people were in a way underground and on the ground and tried to continue what we were doing. I was very close to Jerzy Popiełuszko, who was a priest at that time. He was in Warsaw, and he was, in 1984, he was captured by four policemen, and he was tortured and murdered and thrown into an icy river. And when it happened, something happened in me, too, that I came out of the house that day and I looked into the sky and it was night, and it's just I just couldn't stand it anymore, the whole thing.
So you and Anelia emigrated to the United States then to escape the persecution.
Yes, and I came as a refugee in 1986, and just before Halloween, 2 days before. So I was in Kansas when I came. So.
Before long, you made your way to UCLA, where you coached their weightlifting team.
Yeah, from that on, I was coaching Olympic weightlifters, I was coaching regular people, I became personal trainer, then learn and help people how to get a better body for many years. And then in 90s, I coached in Gold Gym in Venice, and then I started the Olympic weightlifting team there. And I coach about 12 weightlifters, young, usually.
Okay, well, I want to shorten the story a little so we have time for more questions.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't train them anymore, so I came to UCLA and I founded the team there and became the coach of the UCLA weightlifting team.
And more recently, you and Yella moved to San Francisco area where you do have a studio and work with clients. So the book, The Happy Body, the website is a surprise, thehappybody.com. I think it's just a superb book. One of the things that you talk about is that you want people to eat every 3 hours, not the usual advice.
As I said, this fat is sluggish, fat in our body. And in order to lose weight, you have to eat your fat, or use it in a way, so however you want to call it. A person needs to under-eat in order to eat their fat. And then the best way to actually engage that fat and so it could be used would be to have this very relaxed way of living. Very relaxed way of living because a short training system that would create muscle gain and very relaxed, pleasant way of living that would engage your fat as the fuel throughout the day. In order to create this slicing of the fat out of your body system, we started testing how many times a day a person should eat to make it the best. Once a day, we ate once a day, twice, three, four, five, and how for, you know, how many hours between, and we came out with the best way actually is when we eat every 3 hours. And when we eat for about 2 hours and around this 1 hour window is when we don't have food in the body system, when our muscle is not the target for the burning and our fat can be. So let's say a person can burn 100 calories every 3 hours and at the end of the day that's 500 calories. And during the week, it is 3,500 calories. That's the 1 pound of fat every week. So if it's done the right way, then you can easily lose, you know, 52 pounds of fat in a year, living pleasantly, gaining muscle, becoming more relaxed, creating a better posture, achieving a body without pain, without medication. And that was our purpose. And that's what people do in the last 15 years when they come to us. And
okay, and when you say the right way, you're talking about every 3 hours under-eating a little bit, eating a little bit less than you really want, just when you're starting to feel a little bit full.
Yeah, you need to know really how much. So exactly in our book, is there is exact number. So you're never lost, you're never confused, you're never vague. So let's say you are 180 pounds, and you should be, in the book right away, you will see what your weight should be. Let's say you are 180 pounds, but you should be 150 pounds. And if you should be 150 pounds, that 150 calories is your one of the snacks. So you have three snacks. 150 calories becomes your one of the snacks every 3 hours. The meals become 300 calories. So it's very easy to add how many calories you should use and how much you should lose during the period of 1 week. you are supposed to be 150 pounds in life and have this kind of a body, then that weight is measured for you. What is your really metabolic rate? It's 1500 around that. Also, that sets you up for how many calories you should burn during the time of losing weight and how many calories you should eat when you maintain your weight.
One of the things that struck me as really unique about this is you were describing in the book about how after about 2 hours, if you're relaxed, your body starts burning fat. If you're stressed, your body starts burning muscle. So that's one of the reasons you place so much emphasis on relaxation.
Yeah, you remember when I said that if you're very relaxed, the fat is a very sluggish energy. That energy will be used by the body. The body is kind of relaxed and it will give you that. But if you stress, if you are in worries, if you have anxieties, that is action system. That is, you activate sympathetic nervous system. So that will burn your muscle as fuel. The fat will be shut off and then your muscle will become the target. That's why there's a personality, usually people will have a problem of burning too much muscle and then they have problems of being tired and exhausted and worn out. And usually these people also follow with this chronic fatigues and these problems that come from constant stress.
So going back to my introduction when I said it's not just calories and exercise, this is one of the keys that if you can't relax, you're going to be burning muscle instead of burning the fat.
Yes, and that's why not meditation, but relaxation, it became the end of our workout. That after workout, clients ask to lay down and listen to a 5 minutes piece of music. And then piece of music also has this, it's a wonderful piece of music, but it's not everything. That piece of music also has this effect that is pulling you into that music and relaxing you at the same time. When you finish, you feel like your parasympathetic nervous system is taking over from the sympathetic that you use during the training. So when that music is listened for, if that music is listened for 2 years, you know, let's say after 2 years you listen to that piece of music 700 times, the music has the power of a mantra. When you hear this piece of music, you just right away relax. It's almost
conditioned response.
Every cell of your body system receives it.
In terms of what to eat, you're very into keeping blood sugar levels stable. Are you familiar with Dr. Barry Sears and the Zone Diet?
Kind of, yes.
I was just wondering whether you're on the same wavelength or if there are substantial differences.
We followed the complete diet, so a certain balance between zone, no, it was almost too much protein. Follow certain amount of fat, certain amount of protein, but a lot of vegetables. On our plate, when we eat lunch and dinner, it has to be two-fifths of vegetables and only one of source of protein. So when you imagine a plate, you should have two-fifths of veggies and one protein. Anytime that you eat, you have to eat vegetables and you have to eat a lot of it. A small amount of protein, but that, you know, in a way it is, we try to garnish our food with our vegetables with protein instead of the other way around. Garnish actually food with vegetables. We had so many vegetarians and vegans that we helped, and then one discovery is vegetarians and vegans do not eat vegetables. They eat a lot of grains, they eat a lot of fruits, they eat a lot of rice and beans, but not vegetables, not enough vegetables. So, but vegetables is very important for us because they have anti-inflammatory effect on the body system. So it's this, when you think about anti-inflammation, vegetables are the first way. Almost everything else is not. so definitely not fruits. So the fruits, almost all of them, are inflammatory. So we use fruits more to garnish our salads with a little bit of sweetness, or we use fruits for snacks, like, let's say, a couple of berries and some nuts that would provide, let's say, almonds that provide protein and fat, because what you have in fruits, you just have only sugar. So we try to make that complete food that would go into your body and would have everything what the body wants for these 2 hours. So we don't want to create in the body something that the body is missing. Let's say you eat only fruits. What happens then? That you will not have fats and you will not have proteins, and the body after half an hour will ask for it, and you have this strong search from the body for these nutrients. So in order to really avoid that, create this smoothness of the transitions from 1 hour to the other and to second to the third, the body needs everything what it needs for all the digesting system that actually is involved every time.
And like so much of your system, the emphasis on balance.
Yes, yes, it's the balance, yes.
One thing I'm a little confused about is cardiologists tell us, get aerobic exercise for your heart. And I've seen a few theorists that say, your heart muscle isn't going to grow stronger. Your lungs aren't going to go stronger. What's getting stronger is that your other muscles in the body are getting more efficient. Is exercise or aerobic exercise really improving our heart muscle or just the other muscles?
The muscle changes as well. So the muscle of the heart changes when we in endurance training or we are in strength training. But there is a confusion about cardiovascular training versus endurance training. So cardiovascular training is that when we have the heartbeat at a certain level and we have it for a while. So that's cardiovascular. But it doesn't mean that if you are a sprinter and you run, let's say, 10 seconds, imagine a sprinter, 10 seconds, that sprinter is in extreme cardiovascular training. And why? Because after these 10 seconds, that sprinter's heart will pound probably about between 200 and 240 beats per minute. And it will take about 2-3 minutes to drop that to about 90 beats. That sprinter, when he's actually sitting on the bench, he's in extreme cardiovascular training. His body is in cardiovascular. All the glycolic reactions and everything what cardiovascular is happens in his body when he's sitting. So when you think about a sprinter is in anaerobic training, but he is in extreme cardiovascular training. Also, when you think about sprinters, coming back to sprinters, don't they have great hearts? Actually incredible. they live long and they have, you know, great hearts. So what happens to these hearts when we actually train them aerobically and anaerobically, when say endurance and versus strength training? So it happens, one thing happens here, that the normal heart, the right ventricle, has the wall, and that wall of the heart will be stretched by endurance training. And that wall will actually become thinner than normal, because the volume and the space inside that ventricle is more important, because oxygen, pumping oxygen all the time, constantly, is more important. When an athlete trains anaerobically, something else happens, because these athletes are under extreme pressure. Standing the pressure is more important than actually the oxygen, because they are in anaerobic training. They don't need oxygen. That wall of the right ventricle actually becomes thicker. So the regular heart is just the normal. Endurance becomes thinner. A sprinter will have the thicker heart, the right ventricle. So now, okay, let's just think about the heart of the endurance athlete. We know that endurance athletes come to this extreme exhaustion and their heart eventually fails. And endurance athletes show that, you know, some of them die. And then that's what happens. So it could be that actually changing that heart and then thinning that line can actually cause it. That's how I understand what maybe happens. When it comes to sprinters, they are never exhausted, they are never tired, and they are always happy, you know. And when I talk to endurance athletes, long distance especially, they are always sore, they are always in pain, they are always inflamed and dealing with exhaustion. So maybe, you know, having the heart of a sprinter is a better idea. Also, when I compete in this Olympic Masters division, then I see a lot of athletes that long-distance runners and then sprinters. And, you know, many times when I go, you can see a sprinter, you know, 100 years old sprinter, but not marathon runners. Another, you know, kind of looking at that as this sprinting is better for us, simply.
So the good news is we don't have to run long distances and or get on the treadmill. If we just sprint 10 seconds a couple times a day, we'll do our heart more good.
I thought about endurance in this way. I give some height of that is created in all athletics. The Olympic weightlifting became the base for the any sport. So basketball players, football players, and you know, tennis players today, they do Olympic weightlifting in order to make themselves better as athletes in their own sports. So the happy body that created, we thought about that it would be the base of people's sport, people's fitness. When they do the happy body, they will have this efficient body that they can use for whatever they like to do. So, and whatever they like to do, we encourage them to something what is skillful, something what is that will make them better, like dancing or tennis or golfing. In doing that, after 2-3 years, you become a better golfer, so, or a better tango dancer, and it will enrich your life. But if you do something what is mindless, it's not going to add to your life. Unless, of course, it's kind of a recreation and fun. It's fine, you know. It's like you really need to do that. But, you know, recommendation is more toward skills than actually mindless doing things.
And you're getting into my bailiwick now, which is having a sense of purpose. We're talking with Jerzy Gregoryk. He and his wife, Aniela Gregoryk, are authors of the book The Happy Body, just came out this year. Really wonderful book and beautifully illustrated. The website is thehappybody.com. Your studio is in the San Francisco area?
Yes, it's in website, very close to San Francisco. But also we are in Los Angeles every 4 or 5 weeks, and we have also area there that we coach people and see people and our old clients. So we are between San Francisco and Los Angeles all the time.
And you told me that you're working on some DVDs that hopefully be ready in July. What will they be?
Well, the DVD will be about all the exercises that we created, also how to do, how not to do, how watch yourself. So it will be kind of helping the people that visually help themselves. Some people like that visual. And we're also working on our journal that will help people to stay while being on in this transition between the old habit and new habit. So we are creating this journal that will have stories and will have stories that will help people to relate to create this mind that is easier to accept difficulties in life and to do what brings goodness and what sometimes we do not like to do, but it's good for us. So that's what we are working on right now, and should be ready probably in about 4 or 5 months. So we are, you know, we are in this process of helping and writing additional books to inspire and to pose what is obvious, but in a humble way that doesn't have really sides. Like we try to look at a sprinter and a marathon runner. So it's without. Without speaking sides, really, but this, if you do that, it has to be somehow intelligent and understood, and that helps in life, that kind of awareness.
And in the meantime, we have the wonderful book, The Happy Body. And Jersey, I want to thank you for sharing with us. This is the first system that I'm excited about, and I'll show you some before and after pictures in a few months.
Hello, thank you, Michael.
I did have one problem with it, though. I went to a Chinese restaurant and it said, I want to order the Happy Body. And they said, no, we don't have Happy Body here.
Well, you know,
just kidding.
You can eat in Chinese restaurant. They actually have a lot of vegetables. You know, they can, they have these thick sauces, but they have a lot of things, actually, that you can ask them. If you ask them for this wonton soup without noodles, they will give it to you, and then you can get the soup that is a lot of vegetables and broth and a little bit chicken. So that is really good soup. If you ask for any kind of vegetables that could be just only vegetables with some nuts, they will prepare it. So we're also teaching how to eat, how to travel, how to ask, and still today, no, you can actually see that today there is more and more development in on menus toward side orders, and if you look there, you will see that something is really happening, that asparagus and mushroom is there, and then there is a spinach and mushroom, or there is a bok choy or something. So a lot of side orders. I was signing the book in New York at the Book Expo, and I went to this restaurant, and it was kind of a fusion because between East and West, and then I was with my distributor there, and then we look at the menu, and we ordered sol on the bed of a bok choy, and we shared that, so it was just enough fish for both of us. And then we ordered four side orders. We ordered green beans, we ordered carrots, we ordered asparagus, and we ordered cauliflower. And then, you know, we had so much food, and then it was different taste, and it was delicious. The vegetables were really great, and we had vodka drink, and great feeling that we ate a lot. We were happy. We spent about 2 hours there, and we didn't have any feeling that we didn't eat enough. But at the same time, we had a lot of vegetables and tasty, and then we felt good, and we didn't feel like we needed something else.
So you left the fusion restaurant with a happy body.
Exactly. So you know, we need more and more side orders, and you know, only what I would ask if any chef is there or owner of the restaurant, you know, I would ask only for one thing, to create vegetable side orders that people share the main dish and order some side orders and others, and that would be really great for people to have dinner, like for two people.
Jersey, again, I really appreciate it. Really like the book, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Mary. Thank you for having me.
Commentary. My goal for health, wellness, and fitness is different from most fitness gurus. I want people to be healthy as possible now and in their hundreds. I was delighted when I found The Happy Body and its emphasis on holistic health, including strength, stamina, quickness, posture, flexibility, and avoiding injury and undue stress on knees and other joints. The exercises the Gregorics illustrate in The Happy Body primarily use dumbbells and only take about a half hour. That's good news for people like me who don't particularly like to exercise, but do it because I need to. With what the Gregorics say about aerobic exercise, I would add brief sprinting, such as running in place or on a trampoline or down the block, as fast and as vigorously as possible for 10 to 60 seconds. Pursuing sports can be a lot of fun. Most sports, however, aren't particularly healthy. Tennis has a lot of repetitive motion and can be hard on shoulders, arms, and elbows. Even golf has a lot of repetitive motion. Basketball and jogging can be quite hard on knees. Soccer includes headbutting balls, which is bad for your brain, etc. Thus, you are more likely to get fit and healthy from carefully selected holistic exercises like the ones in the Happy Body than from sports. The Happy Body is more than exercise. The Gregorics nutritional advice emphasizes very balanced eating with a lot of vegetables. Did I say a lot of vegetables? A lot of vegetables. Like their exercise advice, their nutritional advice was based on years of experimenting with themselves, other athletes, and non-athletes. Thus, their advice to eat a snack or meal every 3 hours is carefully designed to encourage building muscle and metabolizing fat. Note that they find that to metabolize fat, we need to be relaxed. Likewise, sleep is important for metabolizing fat and losing weight. When I looked at the Happy Body online and saw the $48.95 price tag, I was hesitant to get it because I figured many readers might balk at the price. When I got the book in my hands, I changed my mind. This 8.5x11 book is laid out like a color cookbook or a school book or a coffee table book. It's beautifully illustrated, which makes it all the more enjoyable to read. It does contain everything you need to use their system other than the dumbbells. You are listening to Ageless Lifestyles on webtalkradio.net and permanently archived on agelesslifestyles.com. For information on my books, Defy Aging and 52 Baby Steps to Grow Young, my anti-aging hypnosis CDs, personal coaching, and my keynote and seminar services, just go to notaging.com, notaging.com, or drbricky.com, drbricky.com. I'd love to hear your comments and suggestions. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. This is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.